Second part and final of session 105. Let's talk here about the purpose of the body. Let's begin. As I said in the previous episode, this session is going to end with material that I'm actually surprised to find in what it's called personal material or book 5 material, which didn't come out with the first original 4 books, because I feel like they're talking about information that has to do with metaphysics and how reality works, and it's not so much personal material at this point. So I'm surprised, and I'm also glad that we have this to end this session. Even though session 106, I don't think has any of this. Like I said, believe it or not, I actually never finished reading all of the sessions before I started doing this series. I know, shocking, right? but I didn't read this last sessions because I consider them to be just personal material, and I wasn't interested at the time. But yeah, it's surprising that this is here, and I think it lends a new dimension of understanding, which I'll try to make as simple and practical as possible to understand the purpose of the body. And yeah, we're going to explore that, particularly in third density, but it's going to give us an insight into how it fully works in general, the idea of a body to experience ourselves. So let's begin with the first question that I have, which is where we left off. Question 13. Don says, this is kind of long question. He says, we have been, you might say, experimentally determining a lot of things about the body, the next portion of the tarot, and have been experiencing some of the feedback effects, I might say, between the mind and the body. I sense from everything that we have done so far with respect to these effects that the great value of the third density, yellow ray body at this time, is as a device that feeds back a catalyst to a mind to create the polarization. I would say that this is the major value of the third density body here, and would ask Ra if initially when the mind-body-spirit, not the mind-body-spirit complex, but the mind-body-spirit, so prior to the veil, was designed for third density experience. If this was the major use of the yellow ray body, and if not, what was the purpose of the yellow ray body? Ra simply answers, the description which began your query is suitable for the function of the mind-body-spirit or the mind-body-spirit complex. The position in creation of physical manifestation change not one whit, W-H-I-T, meaning small part, or little fragment, when the veil of forgetting was dropped. So Don's question is interesting in a couple of ways. So the first is that he's trying to find out what's the purpose, obviously, of, when they say yellow ray body, they refer to this human form that we experience because it's third density body. It's what we call a body here in third density. But also he's asking about how was it prior to the veil, and obviously he knows how it is now post-veiling. So that's what he asks, because again, if you read mind, body, spirit without complex, that's pre-veil. If you read mind, body, spirit complex, then that's obviously post-veil. So he wants to know about that. Now, there's a small correction or polishing. I wouldn't say correction, but a little polishing that I will do here. When Don says that the body is a device, right? Yellow ray body at this time as a device that feeds back a catalyst to a mind to create the polarization. Again, this is just the the way in which we can perceive reality from a fragmented way, mechanistic way, but it's not precisely how reality works. We don't understand, from a primordial sense, the idea of parts. We only see one reality. And I want to bring it to that point because I would prefer to suggest to your mind that it sees things from a more realistic way as opposed to something contrived. So that's my only polishing here, to say that Don's, and Ra's going to mention something about this, even if it's not explicit, but it will make this correction, I think, in the next couple of questions, as Don mentions more about polarization. But yeah, don't see the body as a device, like it's a part of reality. Reality is a bunch of parts. It's easier to understand the body as how you perceive yourself in this experience. Yes? So you first identify. Actually, the body is the center of perceptions. That's it. The body is the center of perceptions. And it's okay for us to identify with the body because we identify strongly with our perceptions. And so anything that produces, obviously, these sense perceptions, we call it a body. But it's reality. What is the reality of the body? Well, that's what was known in the period prior to the veil, and it is not very well known post-veiling, for the reason that we know that the veil simply obscures or hides the interaction or the workings between the deeper portions of the mind and everything else, reality, body, spirit, and so on. And when I say mind, I don't mean the particular individualized portion of the archetypical mind, which is the mind. I know it sounds complicated, but remember that the archetypical mind is called the archetypical mind, because within the archetypical mind, there is a perception of mind, body, and spirit. But mind, to me, is the localization of awareness through a particular prism of what the logos design, the archetypes that it design. And the logos being a representation, of course, of the one infinite awareness. So it's, yeah, if you can follow this, that's great. If you don't worry, it's not needed. What's important is that our body, what we feel as our body, is simply sense perceptions. There's nothing else in the body but sense perceptions. Before that, prior to that, there is just pure awareness. And that's what we are. So this was the same thing prior to the veil and after the veil. Meaning that what we perceive as a yellow ray physical body is nothing but sense perceptions. There's nothing else to it. And the mind is involved there. The thinking mind is what I mean. So that's all you need to know, really. The physical body, what we perceive as a body, it's just the center of sense perceptions. I'm not saying anything esoteric here. I think we all can agree with this. We don't know anything else about the body but the sense perceptions, period. The rest is just how we like to break it down and categorize and break apart and so on. But other than that, in pure experience, all we know is sense perceptions. Nothing else. Moving on. Don says in question 14, then the yellow ray body from the very beginning was designed as what Ra has called an Athanor for the mind. A device, you might say, to accelerate evolution of the mind. Is this correct? Again, we see the word device. It's okay, but it should be polished. And Athanor, before we move on, Athanor is a sort of oven, an alchemical oven. So Ra says, it is perhaps more accurate to note that the yellow ray physical vehicle is a necessity without which the mind-body-spirit complex cannot pursue evolution at any pace. And I'm getting ahead of myself here. Okay. So let's move back. Again, the idea of a device, you know, it just needs to be it needs to be improved in our minds. Because what happens if I look at my body as a device, I still fashion this idea that I am, this body is a thing. I mean, it's limited, and that's what I want to bring you out of. It's limited because, one, it doesn't conform with our experience, and two, it's very limiting because it already places you in the it puts you in the position of being an element, a part, a discrete being, you see. So we have to get away from that. We have to understand the body more like an expression, an individual expression of awareness through sense perceptions. And it so happens that we all have the same sense perceptions. So awareness in this earth as third density is filtering itself through the same archetypical mind, yes, but in the body is the same sense perceptions. You see, it's very simple. And so we shouldn't see as a device. But it's okay. It's a good approach to say, yes, it's a vehicle, it's a device, it's a body, it's some sort of, construct even. But we have to move away from that eventually as we move deeper into understanding what is the body. And the other thing that Ra says is that they say it's a necessity. And again, this is something that will be correct. This will be corrected by Ra when Don says that it accelerates, right? It's a device. The body is a device that accelerates evolution of the mind. That's not quite correct. Even though you see from a mechanistic point of view, it seems like it does, but not really. You have to go deeper into what's actually evolving and what is the purpose of the body then for, you know, evolution. And so we start first with Ra saying, this is a necessity without which the mind-body-spirit complex, this growing, this blossoming individual portion of awareness cannot evolve. This makes sense because we need to be in this space-time, in this human experience, to seek, to cultivate this desire for knowing more, for knowing, for exploring more. You see, this intensity that we live, we need to have this body. That's what provides the environment, right? It provides the environment for us to seek and to explore and to enjoy and to nourish ourselves more and more with this love and appreciation for the creation. So it's a necessity. Let's go deeper into this. Question 15, Don says, then you are saying that the evolution of that portion of the individual that is not yellow ray is not possible without the clothing at intervals in the yellow ray body. Is this correct? Ra says no. Don follows up and says, would you clear up my thinking on that? I didn't quite understand your statement. Ra says, each mind-body-spirit or mind-body-spirit complex, so both pre-veil and post-veil, has an existence simultaneous with that of creation. That's beautiful. It is not dependent upon any physical vehicle. However, in order to evolve, change, learn, and manifest the creator, The physical vehicles appropriate to each density are necessary. Your query implied that physical vehicles accelerated growth. The more accurate description is that they permit growth. You see, that's the distinction right there. So let's start from the beginning, because I love this. When you look at yourself as an entity, what you're looking at is a mind-body-spirit, right? Whether it is complex or not. In our case, it is complex. But a mind-body-spirit is precisely that. You know, the idea, or not the idea, but the feeling that I am a mind, a body, and a spirit. This makes total sense, and it clicks with our very basic understanding of reality. What do we feel? We feel a body, which is made out of sense perceptions. Beautiful. Then we understand that we have a mind. See? We know that we know. And so there is thinking, you know, there is fashioning of images and of stories and descriptions and so on. That's happening in the mind. That's why the ancients, up until recently, used to call this six senses. Not just the physical one, but the sixth one is part of all of this. You see, they're intertwined, inextricably intertwined. And so this is the mind and the body. And there is a portion which we call spirit, which is beyond mind and body. In fact, it is prior to them both, we might say. They're all simultaneous, of course, but in terms of what is, we can say obviously that mind is prior to the body. That's why when this body, you see, the sense perception stop functioning, mind remains, you know, and when mind ceases, spirit remains. That's why we could call it sequential, if you will, because we know that one depends on the other. In other words, you couldn't have a body without a mind, you couldn't have a mind without spirit. And spirit being just another word that we use for the movement of awareness and its desire to move. So again, this entity, mind, body, spirit, complex or not, has an existence simultaneous with that of creation. I love this. I love it because creation, this, what we call creation, is it's embedded in the entity. See, that's why we say you are the creator, because everything that you're experiencing, it's being created by you. Not by you, the ego, but by you, awareness of creation. It is not dependent on any physical vehicle. Rightly so, because the physical vehicle is just, how am I going to explore reality and how am I going to experience it? Well, through these sense perceptions. Who knows what kinds of other sense perceptions might exist, but you have to have sense perceptions of some kind to discern the infinite. That's what we're doing. If you haven't noticed, these sense perceptions is how we as wood carvers, you might say, we are infinite carvers, infinity carvers, right? We carve infinity into sense perceptions. And so we experience the world and we say, oh, I have a body. But yes, the body is just a filter in which through different senses, we carve the world, we shape the world, we give name and form, a local habitation and a form. That's what we do with our sense perception. Thank you, Shakespeare. Shakespeare, I think. So, they continue to say, however, in order to evolve, change, learn, and manifest the creator, right? Even though we are, this is independent from body, because, yes, you know, you don't need the sense perceptions to be. That being is already what it is, and the mind actually doesn't need the body, right? I'm talking about big mind here. In order to evolve, change, learn, and manifest the creator, then the physical vehicles are necessary. That's how it is. That's why it's so much fun to have a physical vehicle. Imagine playing a video game in which you have no character. You have to have some sort of character, right? There needs to be something. Even if you're not, you don't have a character, you know, you are supposedly just looking. You are the character there. Without a character, there's no way to traverse the design of the world in which you're moving. And the other part where Ra makes the change, or the what's the word? It just escaped to me. The correction. Don implied, like I said, that the bodies or the physical vehicles accelerated growth. This is not so. This is what permits growth. You see, because sense perceptions allow us to move, act, behave in the world. And so that allows us to grow. Us, awareness. Where am I growing to? Evolving towards one of the paths. So because of this interaction that we have with the world, then we can create growth. Growth in the direction of any path. And that's, again, through sense perceptions. Not only positive, but the negative. Isn't that beautiful? It's a beautiful model. I love it. Okay. Continuing on. Question 17. Don says, now, as an example, I would like to take the distortion of a disease or bodily malfunction prior to the veil and compare it to that after the veil. Let us assume that the conditions that Jim, for instance, experienced with respect to his kidney malfunction had been an experience that occurred prior to the veil. Would this experience have occurred prior to the veil? Would it have been different? And if so, how? It's a really good question. How would physical illness manifest prior to the veil? Remember, we're looking at prior to the veil, no veiling. Ra says, the anger of separation is impossible without the veil. The lack of awareness of the body's need for liquid is unlikely without the veil. The decision to contemplate perfection in discipline is quite improbable without the veil. So these are all the elements present in what we explored in the first part of the session with Jim's illness with the kidney. And there are several elements here. Just to go back to the question, Don is saying, give me an example prior to the veil based on Jim's experience with his kidney disease, right? Ra says, well, first, anger separation is impossible without the veil. So without the veil, there is no way to have anger, period, because you need to have separation in order to exhibit this frustration. If you know what is, then you have no anger. Another beautiful way, this is the reverse side of Sat-Chit-Ananda, right? Be in consciousness, bliss, or simply peace. Peace is probably a better word for bliss. Bliss, we tend to confuse it with an ecstatic state of wow, you know, this uncontrollable ecstasy. It's not true. Bliss is this peaceful state of being. Sat-Chit-Ananda. Well, if you're in that state, anger is impossible. You cannot be, because that's what you essentially are. So you have to ignore that in order to experience something new, which is called anger. Right? So no anger. Jim was a very angry person. I'm not sure how much, though. Jim seems like a very peaceful man. But we all have our fits, you know, and just reactions. And I had a beautiful conversation with him when I went to Kentucky this year. I don't know if I mentioned this already, but I was interested in his anger, because I've experienced anger myself a lot, and I feel like that's like an inherent part of me. I'm not saying that it's inherent in me, but it's inherent in my experience. I cannot deny it, you know, that frustration, that anger has been, you know, my friend for a while. So I need to recognize it as my friend. And so I said, Jim's a great person, you know, to ask this question. And he told me that he didn't, in fact, transcend this until not long ago. So this is something that is it's something that we need to just, you know, welcome into ourselves, as opposed to rejecting it or going through the same bypasses we have to face. But in any case, anger is impossible without the veil. So that condition was not present to create the kidney issue. The lack of awareness of the body's need for liquid is unlikely without the veil. So it's not impossible, but it's very unlikely that you would miss, you know, what the body needs. So you know how we say, listen to your body? Well, that's a very succinct way of saying become ever more aware or penetrating the veil of forgetting. Listen to your body. The body knows what it needs. You just gonna have to be in tune. And so I find interesting how some people, after years of abusing their body with cigarettes and alcohol and trash food or garbage food, junk food, people suddenly start to feel like, you know what, I don't think cigarettes are agreeing with me anymore, and alcohol, I don't think I can drink with my friends until 5 a.m. and then wake up the next day at 8 and be functional. You know, all these things, and you say, well, finally, you know, they're penetrating the veil somehow. And it is, you know, I don't mean it as a joke, it's true. A lot of us, I mean, I drank, I smoked, I learned all these things on my own, and I know what they feel. So that's a sort of way of becoming aware more of your body. That would be unlikely without the veil. You wouldn't do that to your body because you know the consequences. Yeah. So the decision to contemplate perfection in discipline is quite improbable without the veil. And that's what Jim did with the fasting. So these are all the conditions that created the problem with the kidneys, right? Ross said, first, obviously, the anger is something that Jim, Ross didn't say this, but Jim wanted to work on his anger, and he committed to this protocol, let's say, of fasting and contemplation, meditation, and so on. And so that would not have been possible without the veil because, well, you don't need to go through discipline of perfection when you know already everything. You don't know everything, but you know what you are, you know who you are, and you know the connection with everybody and everything. So yeah, just the conditions wouldn't be present without the veil. You can see how much the veil produces this experience of both things. You see anger on the one side and also the seeking, right? That's the discipline. To contemplate perfection and discipline. That's beautiful. That's what we do in this path. And that's the sort of discipline that is required. And those are the disciplines of the personality, my friend, which, believe it or not, we're going to talk about here. So let's move on. Don says, now, I would like to then examine a sample, shall we say, bodily distortion prior to the veil. Did I read that wrong? Let's read it again. Now, I would like to then examine a sample, shall we say, bodily distortion prior to the veil and how it would affect the mind. Could Ra give an example of that, please? So, a bodily distortion prior to the veil and how it would affect the mind. Cool. Ra says, this general area has been covered. We shall recapitulate here. The patterns of illness, disease, and death are a benignant demean. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. It's the first time I see this word. I'll talk about this. Benignant demean within the plan of incarnational experience. As such, some healing would occur by decision of mind, body, spirits, and incarnations were experienced with the normal ending of illness to death. Accepted as such, since without the veil, it is clear that the mind, body, spirit continues. So there's more of this conversation, but let's get the the demean ready. D-E-M-E-S-N-E. It's the first time I actually read this word in the Law of One is where I read it. But that's, I think, the root, or it's associated with the root of domain, territory, or place, where, you know, one has, what's the word? Ownership is not enough, but sovereignty, and, you know, you have, yeah, it's your domain. You do there what you want in there, yeah. So, I don't know where this has been covered. Let's look up the references if you want to take a look. This is question 18. Yes. So, let's see where it has been covered. Apparently, in session 83, questions 3 to 5, and also question 20, session 83, and in the prior question. So, yes. This has been covered. I don't remember those questions, so I don't know. We will recapitulate here, so let's read again what they say. The patterns of illness, disease, and death are benignant. Are a benignant demean. Again, demean meaning domain. Within the plan of us being incarnate here. We often look at, of course, at illness and disease and all these things as bad for us because we're used to identifying with a healthy body. Something that we don't want, you know, to get sick. We don't want to get to decay and so on. But guess what? It will. You have to accept that. Otherwise, we're going against, you know, reality. Everything decays and it's supposed to do that. We'll know more about why or what's the purpose of, you know, this decay and death at the end. But that is the plan, you know, and this is normal. I don't think I have to spend much time here, but it's a benignant quality of the incarnation. It's supposed to bring us to that point. So prior to the veil, some healing would have occurred by decision of the entities, and incarnations were experienced with the normal death that we're supposed to experience. Accepted because without the veil, we simply know that the mind-body-spirit continues. So, you know, I have Nisargadatta's book here, and I love that at the cover of it, there's three mentions. This is knowledge without the veil, right? If you are on YouTube, you can see the cover of the book. You probably can read this, so I'll read it to you. But Nisargadatta says three things here, which are highlighted. He didn't see, and I don't think he said it in this order. But he says, just so you know, like this is the view that develops from this point of understanding who you truly are. How do we see the body? And so Nisargadatta says, the real does not die. The unreal never lived. You see, when you identify with the body, we can say that that is the unreal. We are identifying with the impermanence, with that which is simply the movement of myself. So it's almost like saying, if I stop running, I die, because I am identified with the runner, the runner is you, you know. So you can stop. Once you stop, what you know is that the movement stopped, that particular movement. But you can now maybe, you know, do squats, you know, it's a different type of movement. You see, we can move in all types of funny ways, but when we are identified with one particular movement, in this case the third density human body, then we think we were going to die. But no, movement is impermanent. It's the activity of the body. In the same sense, mind and body are the movement of awareness being the body, if you will, in this analogy. Something else that he says, once you know that death happens to the body and not to you, you just watch your body falling off like a discarded garment. See, you just watch your body falling off like a discarded garment. And the last part, this is all in the cover, by the way. The real you is timeless and beyond birth and death. The body will survive as long as it is needed. It is not important that it should live long. Beautiful. By the way, those not on YouTube cannot see this, or if you're just listening, this is the book I Am That by Nisargadatta Maharaj. It's just conversations with him. It's a similar Q&A with him. So we're not surprised that Ra, Maharaj, Maharshi, their books are all about Q&As because that's the thing, you know, the question is always posed by the confused self, and the answer comes from a clarity point of from a clear self, right? That's what Nisargadatta represents here. So yes, the body is simply that which will be discarded, and that's, we know that. So people who penetrate the veil start to see this, and there is less identification with the body. So what else does Ra say here? They finish saying, thusly the experiences, both good and bad, or joyful and sad, of the mind-body-spirit before veiling would be pale, without vibrancy or the keen edge of interest that such brings in the post-veiling mind-body-spirit complex. So, once again, you see this appreciation of duality for intensification of experience would not be possible without the veil. Again, this may sound like a harsh example, but if we're playing a game and we know that we're just fine, nobody's going to die, really, but it's just a game. We have the rules that, all right, you know, once this happens to you, you're out of the game, right? You're dying. You're dying from the game. Isn't that right? You play whatever board game or video game. Board games are beautiful for this, right? Because you're supposed to get to a certain point. You can drop at some, you know, somebody wins over your cards or whatever, and you lose. You're out of the game. Now, usually, you can see certain people who are too invested in the game, yes? And when you're playing, you know, it's just a game, you're just having fun, and that's it. But some people really get into it, and they feel the emotion of the game, and they get emotional and angry and sad and all these things because they get fully invested. So that's the difference, you know. Do you get invested, like you draw a veil and say, this is not a game, this is real, I don't want to lose, I don't want to get out, I don't want to be kicked out of the game or whatnot. You know, that's the type of attitude, you know, that develops. So imagine a game in which you feel that you're actually going to, you know, die to dissolve, and that's where we are right now. See, that's a lot of passion that develops there, and that passion is what provides, you know, the catalyst for evolution to either accelerate in one direction or the other. So again, the experiences, both good and bad, joyful and sad, any duality really of morality, of attitude or ethics in general, they're going to be exacerbated, you know, intensely lived. So before the veil would be pale. See, Ra always said this. The experiences prior to the veil were very diluted. You know, they were just not very intense. And yeah, we have a vibrancy now that is worth noting. All right, we're getting closer, but still we have a lot to cover. So let's continue. Don says in question 19, at the end of an incarnation, before veiling, did the entity appear physically to have aged, say like entities at the normal end of incarnation in our present illusion? Did they, and he pauses, were they wrinkled and old? Did the significator look like that? Ra says, the significator of mind, body, or spirit is a portion of the archetypical mind and looks as each envisions such to appear. the body of a mind-body-spirit, not complex, but mind-body-spirit, before veiling, showed all the signs of aging, which acquaint you now with the process leading to the removal from third density incarnation of the mind-body-spirit complex. There's more to say, but I just want to make a couple of comments here. I'm going to go with the interpretation that Ra said the significator is something different when they say, because Don asks about the significator, right? Like, did the significator look the same or look like that, wrinkled and old? I don't think that's the significator, really. Could be. I may be wrong, but Ra says the significator of mind, body, or spirit is simply a portion of the archetypical mind and looks as each envisions such to appear. So, yeah, how do we look at ourselves? How do we see ourselves? Do we honestly look at ourselves as old without reference to the body? Like, our feeling of selves, right? What we are. There's something that happens through age. I'm closing on the middle age group of society. But as a man of 42, 41, close to 42, I can say that my view of myself just gets richer, right? I see more of myself, and I can, through the experience, I can see, you know, more of myself, right? So I feel like that's the significator. How you see yourself, it has nothing to do with the body, I think. It's just my perspective. Because then Ra, in the next part of the paragraph, says the body of a mind, body, spirit before veiling showed all the signs of aging that you know now. I wouldn't say the significator owes its appearance to the physical aging. Like I said, you know, this is the physical body is just the way in which we perceive reality and through the sense perceptions, and that has an inbuilt mechanism, you may call it, for aging and decay and finally death. It needs to happen. Ra finishes and says, it is well to recall that the difference betwixt mind-body spirits and mind-body spirit complexes is a forgetting within the deeper mind. Physical appearances and surface and instinctual activities are much the same. So even though it looks like everything is the same, it's not the same, of course. But Ra is making a point here that physical appearances and surface and instinctual activities are much the same, which is, the structure, the sense perceptions remain the same. It's just that what differentiates us is that we don't remember anything. We don't see anything of the deeper portions of the mind. So that's the big difference. And the effects of that, of course, we have been exploring to a degree in the material. That's the whole purpose of studying this. Let's move to the next question. Got a couple more before we end. Question 20, Don says, then I was wondering the root reason for the change in appearance that we see as the aging process. I am trying to uncover a basic philosophical premise here that I may be shooting in the dark at and not questioning on correctly, but I am trying to get at the reason behind the design of this change in appearance when it seems to me that it was just as possible for the mind-body-spirit or mind-body-spirit complex just to simply look the same throughout an incarnation. Would Ra explain the reason for this change? So, in essence, why do we age? Why do we look old? Why do we wrinkle? Why do we decay? Ra says, when the discipline of the personality has led the mind-body-spirit complex into the fifth and especially the sixth level of study, it is no longer necessary to build destruction of the physical vehicle into its design. For the spirit complex is so experienced as a shuttle that it is aware when the appropriate degree of intensity of learning and increment of lesson has been achieved. Within third density, not to build into the physical vehicle its ending would be counterproductive to the mind-body-spirit complexes therein residing. For within the illusion it seems more lovely to be within the illusion than to drop the garment which has carried the mind-body-spirit complex and move on. So that's a very complicated way to explain why we age and die, but the short answer to this is that we don't want to get stuck in this experience and we want to move on to higher experiences, period. Let me untangle all of this though. First, we're talking about the disciplines of the personality. What does this mean? At this point in our study, we understand the disciplines of the personality to be that indication that teaching, which is eternal in all mystical traditions, which is 1. Know yourself, 2. Accept yourself, 3. Become the creator. That's the way it's described in the Law of One, but in essence just means know who you are, then as a function of knowing who you are, acceptance is natural. And as the acceptance happens, which is, I would say, the longer process, then the revealing that naturally happens through acceptance is becoming the creator. So the only thing necessary, honestly, for any person who is interested in this path, the only thing necessary is to not concentrate, but dedicate itself, its sense of being, to the recognition of who they are, period. Acceptance will happen naturally. You won't have to make an effort. The only effort needed is to correct your perception. Perception is not from the outside in, it's from the inside out, if you know what I mean. Simply knowing who you are, and then that perception, true perception, manifests as what it is. I won't tell you what it is. You experience it. But it's nothing too complex, really. That's the first. So that's the discipline of the personality. Now, it's interesting that Ra goes into, instead of answering third density, they go straight into fifth and sixth density. At some point in the material, I don't remember where, they were talking about the appearance of fourth density beings, right? And they were talking about how fourth density beings look, and notice that they mention here fifth and sixth, not fourth, because in fourth density there's still a high association with the physical appearance of third density. In other words, the way in which we manifest a body in fourth density is quite similar to the way we manifest it here in third density, because we're so used to it. It's my speculation. So that is fourth density. But as the entity moves with the disciplines of the personality, knowing itself more, who are you? You are awareness. Ah, so I am not a body. I am not a mind. I can mold this as I wish. And that's where we get into fifth density, for example. That's the work that is done in fifth density. And you don't need a body anymore that needs to go through a process of aging and so on, because you can manifest the body. So in that session, when they talked about the particular the particular body that is manifested in each density, they mentioned how, because in fifth density there's such an ability to work with light or consciousness that the body's not needed. You can manifest any body that you want. Different from third and fourth density, where you're kind of stuck with that that vision or that perception of the body. So that's why they say that it's no longer necessary to build destruction of the physical vehicle. You dissolve it at will. You're living more in consciousness rather than in body. There's another part where Ra says that in fifth density, there is much more work, fifth and sixth density, more work done in time-space, although a physical vehicle in space-time is necessary for reasons I'm not sure. But most of the work is done in time-space. So in essence, existence there is mostly in a sort of meditative state, if you will. Okay, so the spirit complex is so experienced as a shuttle that it is aware when the appropriate degree of intensity of learning and increment of lesson has been achieved. So that's another way of saying, yes, you know, once that body has served its functions for whatever function they decided, then they can move on to the next. They're not so attached to the body, let's say. What else? Oh, did I want to talk about this? Within third density? Okay, so yeah, that's within third density. This is prevail conditions. Not to build the physical vehicle. Actually, it's both pre and post veiling. So not to build this this sequence of decay or aging would risk the, you know, the remaining in third density for too long, because you're so in love with this, you want to explore more. I don't recall having experiences in higher densities, so I can't talk about that, but I can tell you that a lot of us would love to live a million years so we can explore more of this earth, right? But the purpose of this is not explore the earth, but explore yourself. So at some point, you have to die. So, yeah, you have learned enough. You have to get another body and keep going. Okay, so let's move to the next question. Don says in question 21, I see. Then that it is... He says, I see then that it is, shall we say, when an individual reaches a very old age, then it becomes apparent to him in third density that he's worn out. Therefore, he's not attached to this vehicle as firmly with the desire to stay in it, as he would be with a good-looking, well-functioning one. Now, after the veil, the body is definitely an athanor for the mind. Prior to the veiling, did the body serve as an athanor for the mind at all? Ra says, yes, you may ask one more full query. And we're nearing the end of this session. Not much to say here, just to remind you that athanor means a sort of oven, a chemical oven. And that is the function of the body itself. It provides that capacity for experiencing ourselves in separation, and it is not just for the purpose of experiencing yourself in separation, but to live in a perceptual environment of separation and yet seek the one, right? This is supposed to intensify the desire to seek. We're not very successful with this on planet Earth, but that is just one of the perks of the illusion. You can get stuck here. So a lot of us at some point feel this desire, we follow it, and here's where we at. So that's it. That's the function of the body. The body is supposed to give us that intensity of experience so we can go inward. And then we experience reality from a point of view that is just, in colloquial language now, wow. It's just wow. Exactly. Okay, so let's go to the last question, which I've been covering for the last who knows how many sessions, which is the ending. Don says in question 22 to end the session, I believe that I should ask at this time, he pauses and says, is there anything that we can do to make the instrument more comfortable or improve the contact? Since last session, I wasn't able to get that in, and I think it's important. Ra says, we find the weariness of the group well balanced by its harmony. That weariness shall continue in any future circumstance during your incarnations. Therefore, look you to your love and thanksgiving for each other, and join always in fellowship, correcting each broken strand of that affection with patience, comfort, and quietness. We find all meticulous observed We find all meticulously observe in the alignments and give you these words only as reminder. All that can be done for the instrument seems done with an whole heart, and the instrument itself is working in the indigo ray with perseverance. We have previously mentioned some temporary measures for the instrument. If these are adopted, additional liquids shall be imbibed by the instrument and by the questionnaire, whose bond with the instrument is such that each difficulty for one is the same in sympathy for the other. I am Ra. I leave you rejoicing merrily in the love and the light, the power and the peace of the one infinite creator, Adonai. Beautiful. So, just one thing that I want to mention here, a couple of things, but this part where they say, look to your love and thanksgiving for each other. Crucial. This is an indication for them at that point, but it's an indication for all of us at any point. I appreciate this in my own house with the environment that I have created, we have created together, me, my wife, and my son, and this harmony that we have together and we continue to nourish and cultivate. Wherever you are, start appreciating that. Start loving every single aspect. And even that, I can't invite you to do that. I can only invite you to notice it. Don't do it. Notice it. And if you can notice it, keep working on it, because it is there. And the last part where they say, correcting each broken strand, any issues, any problems. How do you correct it? With patience, comfort, and quietness. Beautiful. Patience, always. Take your time. Comfort. Make it in an environment which is not conflictive, yes? In quietness for yourself. Understand what's happening. Put it on the board, on a clean board, not a messy one. You'll be able to observe it better. That's the quietness, the clean board. Everything else is going fine. They just mentioned this as a reminder because they see that everything is fine. So they're saying, we're not saying that you need this, but just a reminder because you're doing all well. Carla is doing great on her indigo ray work. And they mention once again this connection between Donna and Carla, right? So both needed to drink a lot of liquids. I mean, all three of them. Jim was still recovering from his kidney disease. So yeah, it's a reminder for all of us. Drink water. That's my correction to Ra. They say liquids. I say water. Don't drink juice and soda and all these things. Tea is fine, I think. Coffee, maybe. It's also fine, I guess, unless you put sugar and milk and cream and you go to Starbucks and you get those 880 calorie coffees. That's a meal. That's not a coffee. It's not even a meal. It's a junk food meal. Terrible. But all right, if you like it, what can I do? You like it. I'm not going to go against that. So yeah, that's how we end this session. Conclusions. Since we talked about the body, I guess I'll finish with this. I can only tell you that precisely as Ra mentions here, the disciplines of the personality. Yes, isn't it amazing that they mention it in so many ways that it's a reminder of what the results of practicing the disciplines of the personality will yield? And in this case, this view of the body, which I beautifully suggested again in this book, Nisargadatta Maharaj, I Am That, talks with Nisargadatta Maharaj. That is the view that develops. You see, there is a sort of understanding of what the function of the body is. You don't have to suggest yourself something else. You just have to see the body for what it is. You see, it's not a new knowledge that would come through. It's an understanding that it's always there, but it's been ignored by the belief that I am the body, that the body is everything that I am. And yeah, you're living from there. You're living from sense perceptions, and that's okay. You know, eventually you know that they will cease and you will see it, you know, discarded, as Maharaj says. I think even Ross said it here. I forget if they used the word. So yeah, it's an invitation. What are the disciplines of the personality? Know yourself, accept yourself, become the creator. I am specifically devoted to the first two, because the third one is just an aftermath, is a consequence. You know, it's the byproduct of knowing and accepting. Those are the two things that are required by ourselves. And I even said that acceptance is not something that you do. Acceptance is what happens once you know yourself. But you have to continuously bring your attention to that, to that which you are. Know yourself. Keep knowing yourself. And the reason why this becomes a practice, as I call it, is because as a countermeasure, our mind has bought many beliefs based on a different sense of self, a self based on separation. So our minds are going to argue, and rightly so. It needs to do it. It needs to argue and say, wait a minute, what about this and this and this and this? And you have to bathe all these questions, right? That's how you become your own teacher. You have to bathe these questions with the same awareness. That's what informs our minds. So the disciplines of the personality in terms of the body will lead you to this view, to this understanding. It's not even a view, it's an understanding that is there. And there's a detachment from the identification with the body. There's not a detachment from the body. You still have your body, you still, you know, enjoy this, but it doesn't matter what happens to it, especially knowing that it's going to die. It's fine, you know? So it liberates you from that regard. Much more to say about this, but we're at the end of this episode. Speaking of the disciplines of the personality, this is what I decided. I didn't decide it. That just came to me with the direct path, because funny enough, the direct path, which again, Nisargadatta Maharaj is known for contributing a lot to this understanding, this easy way of understanding yourself. The direct path is based on what? Know yourself. Just like any other teaching, mystical teaching that goes straight into the heart of reality. Thus, know yourself. So I became devoted to this path. And in the Law of One, the disciplines of the personality are the analog of the teachings that we find in our mystical traditions. And that's what I dedicate myself to. So why am I saying all of this? Because if you're interested, of course, not only do I have an online course that you can take on your own, totally self-taught. I mean, I'm there, of course, but I'm not physically there. And the whole teaching, the way I like to teach it, is there. All the steps, guided meditation, and so on. Take a look at it. If you do want to work with me, because guiding or guidance is needed at some point, mentorship, that's what I do. I dedicate also my time, and I have a program which I go through with each one of my students, and we go step by step together. We talk about these steps, we have conversations. It's a one-on-one work that we do together, and that's my compromise with you, that you're able to see this in your own experience, and you don't need no more studies. You go straight into the practice of it, of the understanding of it. That's the practice. Practice is understanding. That's all we do here. And we do it through direct experience. So if you want to know more about that, you have to follow the link on Instagram and DM me there. It's the easiest way. You can contact me. We can talk about it, and I can tell you more details as to how we can do this journey together, because it's beautiful. I love doing this with people. I just love it, love it, love it. And I don't think I'll ever end doing this until this body or this garment is discarded. So that's all I have to say. My self-promotion. Thank you for accompanying me again for another session. We have the last session. That's where we're getting into. I'm getting nostalgic already. So last session, I'll probably cover it in two parts. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, thank you so much for being part of this beautiful journey that's ending soon. Have a good day or good night, whatever you are. I hope to meet you at some point. And I have nothing else to say but much blessings, deep peace for all of you. And I'll see you in the first part of session 106.